This show is not intended for the politically correct or the close-minded. Enter at the risk of opening your eyes. You have been warned.
Why does the media attack an issue? To get primetime ratings?
In my line of work, you got to keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in.
The Army Air Forces has announced that a flying disc has been found and is now in the possession of the Army.
A moment comes when we step out from the old to the new, and when the soul of a nation, long suppressed, finds utterance.
Kind of catapult the propaganda.
You are listening to Open Eyes with your host, Ira Robinson. From the normal to the paranormal, from government cover-ups to the depths of our consciousness, we aim to explore all things. From the dawn of prehistory to current events, no topic is forbidden and nothing remains hidden.
No more secrets.
Open your eyes and open your mind to the fact that life as we know it is not as we have been taught. Join us at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com as we take this brief journey through the depths of the cosmos and explore what it really means to be human.
Many peoples have sacrificed their liberties only to learn to their sorrow that deceit and mockery, poverty and tyranny are their reward.
Whether you're online or offline, intercontinental or intergalactic, hello and welcome to Open Eyes. So today is Monday, March, what is it, 2nd? Yeah, March 2nd, 2015. Boy, this month really went fast. February just flew by. I can't believe it's actually been a month since my last birthday. Really, really quickly. Anyways, We're doing this episode from another very, very cold day here in Indiana. And, oh, man, it is just going on and on. What was it? Last episode, I believe it was on Friday, I came out with the information talking about the fact that scientists are talking about the new solar minimum and how we might be entering into a new ice age. And I'm starting to wonder, man. I'm looking at these things very seriously. Anyways, hello and welcome to another edition of Open Eyes. Hopefully this episode is finding you well. I hope that your weekend went good and that you're ready for another week filled with informative shows here on the Late Night in the Midlands Network. And tonight, I believe this is going to be no exception. I have my frequent guest on with me again tonight, Joe Long. And we're going to be talking about issues like the Child Protective Services and, well, it's kind of a, I guess you could say a child-centric episode tonight. And it should be really interesting for you guys. We had a really good conversation and I'm looking forward to you guys listening to it. So before we get into all of that, which will start after the first break, I have some news that I ran across that, well, the first one really disturbed me, and I want to make sure that you guys hear this loud and clear. The internet is stuffed with garbage. Anti-vaccination websites make the front page of Google, and fact-free news stories spread like wildfire. Google has devised a fix. Rank websites according to their truthfulness. Well, this sounds great, right? Well, the author of this article lets the cat out of the bag right away with his comment about anti-vaccination websites. These sites will obviously be shoved into obscurity by Google because they're garbage, whereas truthful pro-vaccine sites will dominate the top-ranked pages on the search engine. A Google research team is adapting a model to measure the trustworthiness of a website rather than its reputation across the web. Instead of counting incoming links, the ranking system, which is not yet live, counts the number of incorrect facts within a page. A source that has few false facts is considered to be trustworthy. The score that they compute for each page is its knowledge-based trust score. The truth-finding software works by tapping into the knowledge vault, the vast store of facts that Google has pulled off of the internet. Facts the web unanimously agrees on are considered a reasonable proxy for truth. Web pages that contain contradictory information are bumped down the rankings. So what this means is that instead of websites being ranked in the Google search engine like they currently are, which is based on the amount of links that people use or that people have pointing to that certain website. So, for instance, if a website has multiple links coming into it from sites that are high up in Google's opinion and that sort of thing, then that website will gain standing in Google's search engine. That's how things currently are right now. What they're going to do is rank it instead based upon what it has devised as being the amount of truth that a particular website or another contains. This truth is going to be pulled out of their quote-unquote knowledge vault, and that is going to be the determining factor of how high on Google's search engine rankings that particular website gets. So, for example, the way it works right now basically is that when someone does a search for something, the results that you see are based on the amount of links and that sort of thing that are going to that particular website from other websites. And anything that's basically past the first page of Google's search engine is never touched. I know this from experience. Especially getting past the second page of Google, you know, down at the bottom when you do a search and it has 1, 2, 3, blah, blah, blah. Those are the amount of pages that it gives you as search results. Currently, a search result that is beyond page 1 gets almost no traffic ever. Nobody ever goes to page 2, really. It's whatever is within the first 2 to 3 rankings of websites that are returned in as a search rating that are the ones that are clicked. So having said all of that, what I can see happening with this is essentially all of the truther type of websites that are out there, all of the independent media sites that are out there that are trying to push forward the truths to all of you guys out here, all of our sites are basically going to fall off of Google's search engines. They're going to be buried hundreds of pages within Google's search pages, and they're never going to be seen. They're never going to get touched. And instead, what is going to be promoted are sites like Wikipedia, are sites like the CDC's website, that sort of thing. The sites that are quote unquote filled with truth. Now, that doesn't mean that they're telling you the truth. That just means that these are the sites that people have pushed forward as the idea of truth. It's a new type of way of dealing with the consensus reality that we're being faced with. You combine this with the whole net neutrality thing, and you can see where all of this is going, right? You can see where all of this is happening. Why is it that this type of an article that Google is doing this kind of change comes right on the heels of the net neutrality crap that got passed last week? Right on the heels of it, boom, right afterwards, they come out with this announcement that this is how they're going to do things from now on. You don't think that that is great timing? You don't think that that's coincidence? You're wrong. That is absolutely planned. 100%. This is a crazy mess, guys. A crazy, crazy mess. Tied into this article is the fact that over the weekend, the big story that was being passed around the internet, on Facebook, on Twitter, on all these different websites, the news stories and so on, is the is it white and gold or black and blue dress story. Man, that thing got so much freaking play. It's crazy. In fact, in total, the amount of web traffic that was dedicated to that particular story, that whole what color is this dress, got three times the amount of web traffic that net neutrality did. The whole passage of net neutrality. Three times the amount of traffic went to people paying attention to this stupid dress and what color it might be, as opposed to the internet, the most effective and powerful tool that we, the masses of people, have at our hands, being eradicated and destroyed and put under a system of absolute control, got three times the amount of traffic than that. What a ridiculous situation, guys. The masses are speaking, and they're speaking bah. This is just insanity. Three times the amount. And Google is not alone in the things that they're doing with this. Not long ago, I also brought you the information that Facebook is doing the same thing. They're going to be implementing their new this article or this story or this post has been found to contain mistruth according to your fellow human beings algorithm that they're going to be using. They're implementing this. So Google is doing this, Facebook is doing this, and they're doing it as ways to try to fight people being able to come forward with the actual truth of stuff. I wanted to make sure that you guys heard both of those things loud and clear, because this is a war. It really is. This is an absolute war for your freedom, for your ability to know and understand the truth. So the other story that I have, and I would like to bring you more, but as I said, I have my guest on tonight, and it kind of went a little bit long on the recording for it. But the other story that I have for you guys is about an Alabama man who won a lawsuit against Janssen Pharmaceuticals, which is a Johnson & Johnson subsidiary, after antipsychotic drug caused him to develop size 46 double D breasts. He was awarded $2.5 million in damages in a Philadelphia court. The man's name was Austin Pledger. He reportedly took an antipsychotic drug known as Risperdal as a child and wasn't adequately warned that he would grow breasts as a side effect. The man, who has autism, was first prescribed the drug in 2002, back when Risperdal was not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration to be used on children. He was 8 years old at the time. The drug's label said that the risk of gynecomastia, which is the condition of men growing female breasts, was low. But by 2006, after the FDA had approved the drug for use in children with both schizophrenia and bipolar disorder problems, the label changed to report high levels of prolactin, which is a hormone that aids in breast growth. When the FDA revised the label, Pledger was 12 years old and had already started to develop his breasts. And the only way they could get removed was through a mastectomy. Now, this is a real good story to show how what we do affects our children in ways that we don't understand. This man, as a child, was put on a drug that was never approved by the FDA to be used in children, you see, and because of that, he was damaged. We see this type of thing happening all the time anymore. It really is scary how much our children are being drugged, and we don't have a clue what the effects are until it is much, much too late. So with that, guys, I need to take a break. And when we come back, I'm going to have my guest Joe Long on with me, and we're going to continue the discussion about things in regards to children and what maybe we can do to try to help keep them safe. So stick around with us. We'll be back in just a few minutes. The Late Night in the Midlands Radio Network is deeply devoted to you, the listener. We feel it is necessary to bring you all of the information that you can use in your life. Each and every day, you will find something to listen to here. And whether you come away from the shows informed, inspired, or entertained, it is our passion. We don't bow to corporations, and we don't have handlers to tell us what not to talk about. We bring you everything. Late Night in the Midlands, however, is fully listener-supported. We need your help to stay on the air and to make sure that we get the bills paid. We need your help to keep the truth alive. If you feel that you have gotten anything out of Late Night in the Midlands, we would appreciate your support. You can become a subscriber and help us out on a monthly basis, or if you'd like, a one-time donation is fully appreciated as well. Every year, the average household in America spends over $3,000 on entertainment alone. If you could help us with just a tiny fraction of that amount, you would make all of the difference. Go to latenightinthemidlands.com and click on the subscribe button. Thank you, and as always, keep yourself informed. Once upon a time, there was a nation which was strong and true. It started out in a grassroots sort of way, with people opening their minds to the thought that things could be done differently than they had been done before, that people could have enough common sense to be able to know whether they were capable of doing something and doing it right. They would put forth effort into building up their communities, working together, talking to each other about the events of the day, and each person's opinion was heard and respected. It held up ideals like equality, free trade, and the thought that each person could make of themselves whatever they wanted to be if they put their minds and their hearts into it. There were many that came along that thought what this nation had done, what this nation had built up for itself and its people, was a bad idea. "These people are not in our control," they said, as they counted their stacks of stolen gold and filthy lucre. So these dark ones, these snakes without faces, tried to sneak into the nation, tried to poison it from within, a snake creeping upon a hare. But this nation, this hare, was too tricky for that. It saw these snakes without faces for what they really were, and banished them from the kingdom. But the snakes learned new tricks as well, and before long, tried again, this time being more sneaky, this time wearing disguises that made them look like the rest of the people. And soon enough, the people were fooled. They were bitten and poisoned from within. The rot did not show at first. That took some time. It was slow, a simmer, a small bit of the life spark that the nation had winking out bit by bit. It was not enough for the nation to notice, really, though some on the fringe tried to tell the others that it was there. No one believed them, though, and the rot continued on, bit by bit, one small spark at a time. A freedom here, a right there, a toleration of horrific things disguised by political correctness. All of these things combined to make the nation a little less than it was before, one day at a time. It soon came to pass that the nation, once a shining place with people that understood right from wrong, became a horribly disfigured version of itself. People walking the streets in ignorance of the suffering around them now was the watchword, when, not long before, would have been a call to action to solve as a community problem. Men became vile, laughing while pouncing on the weak and destroying any sense of humanity that they once held so dear. Women disfigured themselves for the sake of a magazine cover and thinking that what was wrong was right in a bid to become the next selfie star. people begged for more drugs, more pills, more of the creeping death to be injected into their systems as they listened to those in charge telling them the lies that they wanted to hear. The rot began to finally show on the outside. It wasn't long then before the other nations around saw what was happening and decided that now was the time to start dividing up the land for their own purposes. And those snakes without faces counted their gold and their filthy lucre, and threw what they had gained from the death of the nation into the pile of all the other nations that they had destroyed before, and looked around, waiting for the next one to come. Well, hello and welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira, and I want to thank you guys for sticking around through that break. That's that little bit there that you just heard. I wrote that a few days ago after I got inspired to do so, and hopefully you guys like the way that I worked it out there. So as I said before the break, I have my special guest on with me. He's probably going to be my most frequent guest, and I really enjoy having him on because I always have a great conversation with him. It's my best friend slash brother, the brother from another mother, Joe Long. Hello, Joe. Are you there with me?
Yeah, I'm here with you tonight. How you doing, Ira?
I'm really good. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it. We have a few topics that we want to talk about tonight, but before we get started, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself and go from there?
Well, as people who've listened to the show know, my name is Joe Long. I am a relatively 40-year-old single father of two. I am a jack of all trades, your basic average Joe, pun intended. There's not many things I haven't done in my life as far as work, or I have been just about everything you can imagine and some things you probably can't. And I look at the world from a very conservative viewpoint, where you come at it from more of the libertarian, or as I tend to throw at you every once in a while, flaming liberal viewpoint.
Yep, and you need to watch your language there, mister.
whatever. You know that you have some very most of your viewpoints are libertarian, but you have a few that are flaming liberal.
Probably a couple, but you know, you have a couple of them yourself you're guilty of as well, mister.
Oh, I have a few that are radically conservative. Especially if we get talking about guns.
Yeah. Which we may get
about
to.
Guns, you and I can go on for years.
Which we may we get to tonight, actually. Years. Yep, we definitely have. We may get to that tonight. There's a little bit that I ran across that we can go into with that here in a little while. But before we get started on the main topics for the evening, Joe and I want to bring out a tribute of sorts. Last week, one of our personal heroes, you could say, ended up passing away. And I knew that it was coming. He's an older gentleman, but who was in very bad health. But this man was a major influence on my life, for sure. And I know that it was on Joe's as well.
Oh, most definitely.
We're, of course, talking about Leonard Nimoy, who was the wondrously fascinating Spock on the Star Trek series.
Not only Spock, but he did another show after Star Trek was over that fostered my earliest questioning of the universe, and that was called In Search Of.
Oh, yes. I loved that show.
And he was the host of In Search Of, and that's what started to lead me down the line of questioning everything, you know, looking at things from a different perspective.
It did me too.
It was a wonderful show.
It did me too. I remember watching it and really enjoying it when it was being aired, dating ourselves here a little bit.
most definitely, my dear friend.
But yeah, it was definitely a major influence on my early looks into what could possibly be out there. I had a couple of sound clips to play you guys that I had put together. These are some quotes from the Star Trek series that I thought fit the theme well of my show, but also as a tribute again to this wonderful actor and great person. So this is just a minute long. Go ahead and take a listen here.
Being a red-blooded human obviously has its disadvantages. Fascinating. On my planet, to rest is to rest, to cease using energy. To me, it is quite illogical to run up and down on green grass using energy instead of saving it.
I see no reason to insult me, sir. I believe I've been completely logical about the whole affair.
Pain is a thing of the mind. The mind can be controlled.
Captain, I see no reason to stand here and be insulted.
I'm frequently appalled by the low regard you Earthmen have for life. Fascinating is a word I use for the unexpected. In this case, I should think interesting would suffice. Military secrets are the most fleeting of all. I hope that you and I exchanged something more permanent.
Logic is a little tweeting bird chirping in a meadow. Logic is a wreath of pretty flowers which smell bad.
It is almost a biological rebellion, a profound revulsion against the planned communities, the programming, the sterilized, artfully balanced atmospheres. They hunger for an Eden where spring comes.
This troubled planet is a place of the most violent contrasts. Those who receive the rewards are totally separated from those who shoulder the burdens. It is not a wise leadership.
An unscrupulous man were to gain certain knowledge of man's future. Such a man could manipulate key industries, stocks, and even nations, and in so doing, change what must be. And if it is changed, Captain, you and I, and all that we know, might not even exist.
The wonderful Leonard. What did you think about some of those quotes there, Joe?
They are the quintessential Spock. I mean, they encompass who and what he was. Now, Leonard Nimoy in the late 60s, after the show had finished, and it was still had a very large cult following, wrote an autobiography that said, "I am not Spock." It was simply titled, "I am not Spock." Because most people, when they saw him, even though he was a very accomplished actor before Gene Roddenberry brought him into the series, they saw him as Spock, and they would come up to him and treat him as Spock. And while he enjoyed some of the notoriety, it also kind of irked him. It wasn't till much later in the mid-90s when he wrote a second autobiography simply titled "I Am Spock" that he fully embraced what the Star Trek universe had given him, that he has achieved what all people have been trying to achieve for many thousands of years. He's achieved immortality.
Absolutely, yes.
The same as the other greats of the original series that have passed on. James Doohan,
yeah,
the immortal Scotty.
Yep.
And of course, and I say this with the greatest respect, that the afterlife has gotten much more interesting because Leonard Nimoy, Spock, and DeForest Kelly, Dr. Leonard McCoy, are once again together. And I can guarantee you they are once again locking horns.
Well, they had a very good friendship, actually, in real life, you know, outside of the actor's studio. The two of them had a very deep friendship, as did most of the cast, actually. Some of them, some of them had a flare-ups between them. But now, the reason why we're talking about this tonight is because both Joe and I are Trek fiends. We have been Trek fiends for pretty much the entirety of our lives, and it's had a major influence
and
on our lives.
Now, you must understand, there are different classifications of Star Trek fans. You have your Trekkers, which are devotees of the original series. You have your Trekkies, which are devotees of the newer series, such as Star Trek Next Generation, DS9, or Voyager. Then you have the classification that is Ira and I. We are Treks. If it's got Star Trek in the title, we love it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm a fan of all things Star Trek. And I have the collection
to
prove
it. Your Star Trek collection is quite impressive, my dear brother.
Yeah, I have the collection to prove it. Anyway, so the reason why we wanted to bring it to tonight's show, though, is because of the influence that the show, and in particular Leonard Nimoy, had on me as well as Joe, I know, not just with Star Trek, but with everything that he really did with his life. He was always the gentleman's gentleman, so to speak. He was always very open and honest about the things that he did, who he was, what he stood for, and all of this stuff. And
yeah,
one thing that I found out, one thing that I found that was interesting is that the famous what's the word?
The I'm Vulcan salute.
Yes, thank you. The famous salute that he did actually was a Jewish symbol that he brought out basically into the public eye. He was I saw an interview with him a while back where he was talking about the symbol, and he said that how it came about was he was a young child, and his father took him to temple. He was Jewish, took him to temple, and during the temple proceedings, they were told to avert their eyes and close their eyes. So he did so, and he heard a bunch of people discordantly shouting in Jewish phrases or Hebrew phrases, sorry, and they were doing it in a very discordant way. They were not at all unified or anything. They were called shouters. And when they were doing this, he peeked his eyes and he saw that they were standing before the congregation with their hands extended out in the shape of that Vulcan salute that everybody knows so well.
Yeah. And the way it actually came to the show was quite interesting. Yes, it was it was an homage to his Jewish heritage, but Gene Roddenberry, during the original workup for the second pilot, not the first one, because you didn't see that in the first pilot. It was actually wasn't till the second pilot that you actually see this symbol.
Actually, no, it was not actually until Amok Time that it came about, and it was when he was
true.
Standing there with the other actress who played
T'Pol,
and they were standing there looking at each other, and he talked to the director and to Gene and said, "There needs to be something here because everybody I'm sorry, I was just going to say because everybody, all the human cultures have some form of greeting. They, you know, salute, they'll bow. They'll anything along those lines. So there should
something
be something
Vulcanian.
For Vulcans. Right, exactly. So go ahead.
And he looks at Gene and goes and flashes the very famous Vulcan salute. And Gene goes, okay, that works.
Right.
I mean, it was just that simple.
Right.
And it was done.
And what
it has now become there are people who practice many years to be able to do that salute because they can't naturally do it. And then there's people like my brother and I who've been able to do it since we were like two.
Right. What it actually is the symbol for the word shin, or the letter shin in the Hebrew language. And this is the beginning of things like the word Shaddai, which is one of the words for God, Shalom, which is the greeting. It's that gesture is symbolic of that letter. And essentially what it comes down to is that this was used as a benediction, or is used, sorry, as a benediction in the Hebrew religion. So he thought that it was humorous that people would come up to him and flash that salute at him, and he would do it back, not realizing that they're actually using a Hebrew benediction or a blessing, basically, not realizing that they were doing this the whole time. So I thought that was rather interesting that he would bring something out of his culture into kind of the forefront of pop culture.
And the, you know, his famous catchphrase, live long and prosper, was something else that he brought to Gene Roddenberry. That was not a line that Gene created for Leonard Nimoy. That was something he came up with himself.
Yeah, there was
live long and prosper.
There was actually quite a few things in the Vulcan way of thinking, or in that specific character's way of thinking, that Leonard basically brought to the show. He essentially created all of it himself. There was just kind of a basic outline of his attitudes, his background, and that sort of thing. And Leonard basically developed it all from there.
Right. Because Leonard Nimoy was a method actor. He was the method actor. He actually taught method acting before coming to Star Trek. He enjoyed playing the outsider, the outside characters, the ones that were not quite the norm. And he said that with this role, he had the best of both worlds. He had that insular, isolated outside character being the only alien aboard this starship. But he was still also part of the group. He was part of that main family group.
Yeah, Gene brought the character out as a way to basically act as a commentary on human society and on the society of that time period, you know, during the 1960s. Some of the things that he saw going on and some of the things that were happening culturally. And so Spock basically was the outsider looking in, basically, and being able to act as a commentary on it without people being insulted for the things that were being said, because this guy is an alien.
Exactly. He also made the perfect foil, being the ruthlessly logical and unemotional character that he was. He made the perfect foil to the sometimes rash, sometimes hot-headed, sometimes overly emotional character that Bill Shatner played of James Kirk.
Right.
I mean, you had that beautiful balance and the opportunities for comic relief in what was a very serious, at the time, very serious science fiction show, which was had not really been done before. They had, you know, you had your Lost in Space that was out of roughly around that same time, but most of them were family oriented, almost sitcoms, and they were mostly half hour long. This was the first serious drama that was an hour long program.
Yeah, according to Gene Roddenberry, what he did was he was trying to create the wagon train to the stars, basically, or in the stars, basically. So
he did. It wasn't be for another wonderful person who left us many, many years ago, we would not have Star Trek. I'm talking about who actually the studio heads that actually produced Star Trek. It was not Paramount at first. It was Desi Arnaz.
Right.
And the great, funniest redhead of all time.
Right, yeah, Lucille Ball.
Lucille Ball.
Yeah.
They are the ones that, because when Gene originally pitched the original pilot to, it was Paramount, I believe, Paramount Television, they said, no, we don't want this. Lucille Ball saw it and she goes, yeah, yeah. Come on, Gene, you come with me. Desi will love this. And It was the Desi Lu Studios that produced all of them. And Paramount was like, what did we do?
Yeah. Which then they later acquired it
because they bought
taking
out
advantage of it ever since. Right. Exactly. So, anyways, we wanted to talk to you guys a little bit about some of the influence that Star Trek itself has had kind of pop culture wise and science wise. We have a lot of things that are, used on a daily basis now because of Star Trek. You have your cell phones. If it wasn't for Star Trek, they would not have really started doing things cell phone wise. So that's one
exactly. thing. I mean, if you look at the original cell phone, if you look at the original, not the big brick,
right? Not the military true, one.
Right. But what they consider the first true portable cell phone, it's a flip phone. You flip it open, you press the buttons, you talk.
Right, just like the Star
Trek
communicators.
What did James Kirk always use?
Yeah. Dee-dee-dee-dee. The Star Trek communicators. Yep, exactly. Yep.
And what we're talking on right now, what you're listening to our program on right now, is inspired by Star Trek.
Yeah.
The internet.
The internet, exactly. And not just the internet, but the modern computing systems now were heavily influenced by the ideas that were in Star Trek as well.
Exactly.
So a lot of things are heavily influenced by this phenomenon that took hold and was actually driven into pop culture by people like Leonard Nimoy, who, again, we're kind of doing this as a tribute for. So we wanted to talk to you guys about that because it really is fascinating, some of the things that are here now because of this little science fiction show that people kind of blew off at the time, and yet now
has grown into the – we figured it up. Star Trek has been in our culture for almost 50 years.
Right. Next year will be the 50th anniversary.
50th anniversary. And there's never been a time that there was not something Star Trek related being worked on or in production since the late 80s.
Right. But now you have the fan
web shows.
Yeah, yeah.
There are professionally produced web shows that are still out there.
Which are actually
starring a lot of the cast members that were on things like Voyager.
Right, I was just going to say that. Yep, I was just going to say that they're actually produced and heavily influenced by the actors and producers that did the original shows. Yeah. So, anyways, okay, so we'll get off of our high horse here on Star Trek because we could go on for a few shows about our love
yes,
of Trek.
We could. But we must say to Leonard, thank you. Thank you very much for the many years of wonderful memories that you have given, not just to myself and my brother, but to all of us in the Star Trek community and those outside of the Star Trek world.
Yeah, I love it because my children still watch it.
That had nothing to do with Star Trek, for the hours of entertainment and joy that you brought to us, I have only one thing that I must say. Live long and prosper.
My children still love Star Trek, and they, I know, are going to be watching it for many years to come. They are fascinated by it. They love it. They love the ideas that are put forward in it, the idea that humanity can overcome the things that we're seeing right now, and that we can come together as a unity and move forward into our next stage of evolution, our next stage of civilization, and drop away from the darknesses that we've got going on right now. That is the power of Star Trek, and that is the thing that I love the most about it.
I've always just wanted one of the ships and a phaser. That's all I really want.
You and me both. You and me both.
I don't even need the ship. If I could just have a phaser so that if somebody's really, really annoying me, I could just stun them.
Yep.
I'd never set it to kill. It would just be on stun. They're really annoying me. Okay, now I can be at peace.
Okay, just admit it. You would drive down the road just stunning everybody in front of you so that you could get to where you're going in a hurry.
And what's wrong with that?
Absolutely nothing. So, Joe, I know that you, before we started talking tonight, before the show, I know that you were talking about a specific news story that you ran across that you wanted to make sure to talk about on tonight's show. So I'm going to let you go with it. Go ahead and bring it up.
on Yahoo a few days ago about a young boy in Texas that had his head drawn on by a school administrator because he said that his haircut had violated the school's dress policy. So the assistant principal brought him into his office and took a black magic marker and drew on his head. Now, me as a parent, I would have probably walked into the assistant principal's office with a marker of my own and started drawing on his face. You know, the mother is quite understandably upset. And now the thing is, most people understand that kids nowadays have some rather radical haircuts. Nothing like, you know, myself.
Oh, they had nothing. They had nothing on the
page boy haircut for the last 10, 15 years.
They had
or my
nothing.
Brother who hasn't had a haircut in about the same amount of time.
They had nothing on the 80s hairstyles, though. Come on. Nothing compares to the 1980s. The cans of hairspray that were thrown away. One can of hairspray per hairdo per day. Come on, man.
You've got a point.
The gravity-defying hairstyles that went on during that time period amaze me.
Well, I will admit, during that time, I did get a little daring. I had the whole flat top thing going on, you know, the copious amounts of mousse to keep it, and, you know, absolutely still, that if, you know, somebody came up and patted me on the head, they were probably going to get, there was probably going to be grievous bodily injury.
Yes.
I will admit this, you know. But this hairstyle, it was designed, the kid had a line shaved in his head to represent a part in his hair. And I've seen the pictures of him. Unfortunately, when I tried to look it up, I couldn't find them. Or I would have Ira post them on his website. But this kid looked rather presentable, given what, you know, some kids are now shaving into their head logos and phone numbers and, you know, whatnot.
Right. It was a moderate hairstyle.
Right. This is a very respectable hairstyle. Well, they said it was, according to the Plainview, Texas school system, they do not allow any designs to be sculpted into a hairstyle. And they consider a line a design. Now, I'm no artist, I'm no geometry major, but as far as I know, a line is the beginning of a design, a line is part of a design, but I've never heard a line as being a design. What
well,
about you?
You know, when it comes to modern art, they poop laying on the floor is a piece of art. So I suppose a line drawn would be there.
Do not even get me started on art.
No, I understand where you're coming from, though. That it all falls into the whole no gang symbolism and that sort of thing. It's ridiculous. I understand their idea behind it, but again, that all falls into the whole zero tolerance policies that I discuss sometimes, which are absolutely ridiculous.
Let's not go into zero tolerance discussion because we'll be here all night.
This falls into the realm, though, of chewing a Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun and it being a problem. Zero tolerance absolutely aggravates me.
Exactly.
That's what this dress code stuff is about. It's zero tolerance as far as gang symbolism is concerned.
And the thing is, the mother was understandably quite upset. You know, and the principal and the assistant principal and the school board are like, well, you know, it's part of the policy and, you know, it was sent home and, you know, you can get it on a handbook online and this and that. You know, they didn't even talk to the mother about it. And this child has been getting this particular hair, and this kid was in middle school. So he's, you know, between 12 and 13 years old, somewhere in that neighborhood. Given that particular neighborhood, and I'm sure anybody out there that has children in that particular age group know that that particular neighborhood can get rather rocky rather quickly. this is a good kid. He's an honor student. He does his homework. He doesn't talk back. He wears khakis and a nice shirt to school. He's not wearing baggy chinos and going, you know, the button-up flannel with only the top button going, ASA. You know, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a good kid here who had a respectable haircut, and because somebody had decided they didn't like it, decided to draw on his head with a marker.
Yeah, and that right there is very stupid in my mind. It really is. When you brought this up to me, it reminded me actually of another story that I wanted to bring up myself, because this again falls into the zero tolerance stuff that schools do. Now, this one, I don't have a specific article for it. It's one that was posted to my Facebook from somebody that is one of my followers. But they were talking about a six-year-old boy who gets punished. He's been punished actually multiple times in this way when his mother dropped him off a minute late to school. So he was 1 minute tardy getting into the classroom. Because of this, the principal segregates him in the lunchroom behind a partition so that he's eating lunch behind this partition away from all the other children. They call it, I guess, silent lunch or something along those lines. But he's a six-year-old boy being punished for something that is absolutely nothing to do with him, completely out of his control, and is punished for something that somebody else does. Now, to me, this is something that's absolutely wrong. This really pushes my buttons, because I can't stand it when somebody is punished for the wrongdoing or the perceived wrongdoing or anything like that that somebody else does. This kid had nothing to do with what he, you know, is being punished for. And it's the same thing with this kid with the haircut, really.
Exactly. I mean, well, the kid with the haircut, I mean, he actually went out and actively got haircut. This is the one he asked for. But, you know, the mom said, hey, it's not a bad haircut. You're not getting a design, whatever. As far as a six-year-old being punished because his mom gets him to school late, that's absolutely and utterly ridiculous. That principal needs to have his head examined he needs to have his head examined with a sledgehammer, but, you know, that's just me.
Yeah, I tried actually calling the principal to voice my ire at this woman, and it was a woman principal, actually, and the phones just kept ringing busy. The school district...
I'm sure that they're getting several thousand phone calls.
Yeah, according to one article that I ran across, the story itself has been shared something like 25,000 times, and multiple people have tried calling in. The school district said that they've now worked out the things with the mother, and that they're going to reevaluate their disciplinary system. Gee, you think that might be a good idea?
Exactly. Well, it comes down to something that you and I have discussed on many an occasion. We actually did one of our earliest collaborations together several years ago, a YouTube video on a very similar subject to this. You remember that one?
Yeah.
It ended with a memorable slap.
Yeah.
But it is... what the schools are doing is, one, the zero tolerance policies. The other is, it's a legal term known as in loco parente.
Right.
Which literally means that while the children are at school, the school acts in lieu of the parent. They become the legal guardians while the children are on school property or during the school day. They become the legal guardian of that child in lieu of the parent. Now, that doesn't mean they have carte blanche to do whatever they want. The parents do still have the right to, and I will date myself and also make myself look like an absolute fool. When I was in elementary school several hundred years ago, I actually was still in school at a time when corporal punishment was used as a form of punishment in Indiana.
You and me both.
for those of you of the younger generation who have no idea what we're talking about, and I know there are a few of you out there that listen to this program, corporal punishment means we got our butts spanked with a paddle by the principal.
Yeah, my principal had one named the Terminator.
Yeah, my principal, his was the Intimidator. But in Indiana, before they could spank you, they had to receive parental consent. I'm sure that when they would call your mother, she'd say, go ahead, and remind him that he's going to get 10 times worse when he gets home.
Yeah, because my mom had actually a lard paddle.
Now, my mom, the one and only time that I actually was taken to the principal's office to get paddled, not the only time I was taken to the principal's office, mind you, but to get paddled.
I think I spend more time in the principal's office than I spend in the classrooms.
I wasn't quite that bad, but I was close. They took me to the principal's office. The principal called my mother. My mom worked about 10 minutes, 15 away from the school I was attending. They told her what was going on. They told her what was going to happen. And my mother, and I could hear my mother yelling at this principal over the phone, "You spank my child, I will break your neck." She was there from where she worked in 5 minutes. Here I was thinking I was begging the principal to please spank me before she got there.
Please don't let me have her.
Because I figured that she was going to take care of the situation when we got home. Once the situation was explained to my mother and she got both sides of the story, she removed me from that particular school, put me in one that was closer to our house, because the reasoning that I was about to be spanked is I told a teacher to go. I called a teacher a few choice words because she was constantly picking on us because she was taking out her anger and aggression on her students. And this was a class of fourth graders.
Yeah. And I've seen that kind of thing happen actually very, very frequently. That's one of the part of the, that's one part of the problem that I see going on is that there's a decided lack of structure when it comes to how things are handled. And the individual principals, for instance, in the schools tend to have the ultimate authority basically to decide what is going to happen in the school, as opposed to having some sort of structure saying, these are the things that are limited, these are the things that you can do. I see that exactly. As one of the problems.
Well, and, you know, in my situation, it was a matter of this lady had been brought in from another state with two other teachers. You know, they were all supposed to work here together, be friends. Well, before the school year started, these other two had fallen in love, gotten married, moved away, and left her all by herself in a new town where she didn't know anybody, and she took it out on us.
Yeah, and again, that shows, though, the okay, see, I guess one of the other issues that I have when it comes to the educational system is that in a lot of cases, the people that are deemed to be educators are psychopaths. Without any biting bones about it, they are, when it comes down to it, either psychopaths or sociopaths, one or the other. They have.
Yeah, there are a lot of them that are. I mean, don't get us wrong. We are not bashing teachers here. Most, you know, there are wonderful teachers out there. There are ones that really do care about their students. There are ones that, you know, take the time and the effort to help those that are behind. But it seems lately that a lot of teachers people are being drawn to teaching because of the power and control.
Right, exactly. And that's the point I'm trying to get to. Right, exactly. Thank you. That's exactly what I was trying to get into, is the idea that there's a decided lack, I guess you could say, of evaluations that are going on with the people who are being put into these positions of power. You see the same thing happening with CPS or Department of Family Services, whatever it might be in your state.
Oh, don't even get me going.
Now, I actually wanted to get into it, actually, because there's a story ran across. Yes.
Let's get it on, shall we?
So the story here is that the state of Alabama, the Department of Family Services in Alabama, seized 7 children from a family after one of their children wandered away from the house. This child was 6 years old at the time and was later actually diagnosed with autism. And the child was basically doing the wandering thing that happens occasionally with some autistic children. It's called elopement. It's one of the symptoms of autism. Seth had that himself at one point in time. Thankfully, he essentially grew out of it, but not all autistic children do. Sometimes they do still have that tendency to wander away from where they live. So the story with this is that this child wandered away during the middle of the night and actually had drug his 2-year-old or 3-year-old sibling with him. The neighbors saw this, called the police. When the police came, they came actually with Department of Family Services, DFS, thank you, DFCS, I guess is what it's called, Department of Family and Children Services there, and seized all of the children from the home. And basically have now taken the children away from these parents because of this issue. So it was a nosy neighbor basically who called the cops, who came in saying that they were negligent of the children and removed the children from the home, and they cannot get custody back. The CPS, I'm sorry if I say CPS just because that's what it is here and that's what I'm used to saying, so pardon me people, but the CPS there basically told them that they would not be able to get their children back for an extended period of time. Okay. Now, in the meantime here, this child has been diagnosed with autism. He has had the wandering issue in other foster homes that he's been in. And during one of the hearings basically that was going on with CPS between the mother and the father and mother kind of got into a little bit of an argument because CPS wanted them to sign a certain piece of paperwork, and the father said no, the mother said yes, just because she wanted to get the children back. And because of that, CPS has now said that it's a dangerous environment for the children to go back into, and that in order for her to get her children back, she has to divorce him to get the kids back. So go for it.
Give me just a second, folks. I'm looking for something on my desk. Oh, here it is.
Got to have that duct tape.
Duct tape firmly in place. Let's begin. First of all, I don't blame the neighbor for calling the police. You see a 6-year-old child dragging a 2-year-old, 2 or 3-year-old out of a house in the middle of the night.
It could be a dangerous situation. Yes, I don't blame them at all either. But
okay,
go on.
But the question I have is, what in the flying fiddler's crab was the neighbor doing with her nose pressed to a window at 2:00 in the morning? Can you explain that one to me? But the cops showing up and dragging a child protective service officer with them, again, I understand that. It's usually standard procedure. And this is coming from somebody who comes from a law enforcement background. Most of my family are police officers. But what I have a major, and I will repeat this for the peanut gallery, major issue with And it's the same issue that I have had with Child Protective Services, DCS, DCFS, or whatever the heck it is called in your particular state, principality, municipality, or whatever polity you're in, is the fact that they remove the children without any, and I repeat, any legal recourse for the parents. Was there a court order? No. Was there a judge consulted? No. They came in and said, oh, children are in danger. They're gone. Now, according to the Constitution of the United States, no person can be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. And I know this is going to sound callous, but according to the way the laws are written in pretty much every state in the union, children are considered the property of their parents.
Yes. I want to read part of the article here for you, actually, because this is an important aspect of this whole case. Okay.
Okay.
These children who were originally taken because a child on the autism spectrum was eloping now face their parental rights being severed. During a hearing on February 18th, the caseworker named Alicia allegedly told the Cartes, which is the family in question here, that they will file in 30 days for a TPR, termination of parental rights. Even the 18-year-old will be included because in Alabama, kids are not legally adults until they are 19. Someone has apparently been talking to the kids about that possibility. During a phone call with Timothy, which is the child with autism, as Sabrina is the mother, was trying to reassure him that they were working hard to get them back home, the 8-year-old told her, "Mama, I don't want to be put up for adoption." Sabrina and Tony, the parents, said that their attorneys and social workers who work in neighboring counties have said that if they had been in another county, their children would have already been home long before this. So not only are they now not at home, but they also face the possibility of never coming home and being adopted out to other families.
It sounds to me like somebody's getting paid somewhere.
It really does.
If they have social workers and attorneys that are in neighboring counties in Alabama that are saying if they would have been in one of these other counties, their kids would have been home long ago, but because of the county they're in, they're not home.
One of the main reasons.
There's something seriously wrong here.
One of the main reasons is because the CPS worker, the Child Protective Services worker, has a personal issue with the parents and is using her power basically to prevent them from having their children back because it's a grudge.
What these people need to do is they need to appeal to the state because DCFS, child in Indiana, it used to be CPS. It is now the DFFS.
DFCS.
Yeah, the Department of Family and Children's Services.
Right.
They administer, and they're child protective services. They administer the Medicaid program and food stamps, and they basically made it one giant, humongous bureaucracy. You gotta love bureaucracies. But in every state, these are state-run agencies, and they are accountable. The individual workers in each county, and they're usually multiple ones, are accountable to the people above them in the county and then accountable to the state itself. They need to contact the attorney general and say, yo, we got an issue here. And for this worker to say, for the mother to get her children back, she needs to divorce the father because he decided to stand up to this woman and say, no, we're not signing some piece of paper that says you have the right to come in and do. I don't even know what the paper was about. Do you?
I do not remember. Go ahead and talk and I'll look on here real quick.
But to say you have to get a divorce to get your kids back is the height and breadth of lunacy. Now, I have been having a running firefight of sorts with Child Protective Services for about 20 plus years because I believe they have entirely too much power. and they exercise their power in an indiscriminate and unjust way. In Indiana, here in our local community just recently, we had a tragedy of sorts. We had a tragedy. A young boy, 3 years old, living with his mother, her boyfriend, and a underaged friend died because the mother and the boyfriend decided to put methamphetamines in the child's bottle because they wanted him to have as much fun as they were having on methamphetamines. And believe me, I'm not going to turn this into a drug rant because my brother and I could go on for hours hours on the methamphetamine problems in Indiana. But this young boy, after when they woke up the next morning and were relatively sober, was found dead. They took the boy. Instead of calling police and saying, hey, this was a tragedy, it was an accident, whatever. No, they took the boy, they put him in a box, they took him to the woods, and they burned him. And then they called the police and said he was missing. And half of the county that I live in, including myself, turned out for the search for this little boy. He was found. And these people have, quite appropriately, been arrested. They're facing enough charges against them that they will never set foot outside of a jail cell ever again. But it has also come to light that the father of both, she had two sons, a six-year-old and a three-year-old, that the father of both of these boys had called Child Protective Services on multiple occasions and said, this woman is doing drugs, she is manufacturing drugs with my children around. Was anything done about it? No. They came out, they said, oh, we're not seeing any problem here.
The social worker, but in the meeting here real quick, the social worker wanted them to sign a service plan, and the father, Tony, was refusing to do it. Sabrina wanted to do it in the hopes that the children would be able to come back home.
Okay, a service plan, which basically gives this woman the power to come in their home at any time for any reason and, again, jerk your children away.
Right, and one of the reasons why the caseworker basically is against this family so much is because while they were having a meeting with the children, you know, while they were having a visitation with the children, the 16-year-old in the family, Leona, was visiting with her brothers and her mom at the office. The child reported that the caseworker named Alicia McFarlane was being highly rude towards her and her mother that day. And she also said that as the caseworker was trying to drag the rest of the children out, she ended up slapping the autistic child on the butt 5 times to get him to get moving. So they reported that to the higher authorities within the DFCS, and that is where the issues really started to come to light, because the caseworker said, and I quote, said that if this is from the mother, said that if I called anymore, she would make it hell for me to get my kids back, and it would be a hell of a roller coaster ride. And she said, what can you do if we go against the DHFS? They threaten to keep the kids.
Okay. Now, they have an attorney. And I'm glad of that, because most people that get into this type of situation don't.
Right.
Have an attorney. And they don't have anybody to advocate for them. Now, and this is where I was talking about, you know, these sound like wonderful parents. They have raised 6 kids. They've got, you know, they're not in trouble. They have an autistic child, which you and I both can sympathize with.
Because they actually have 2 autistic children.
Huh?
They actually have 2 autistic children.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed.
You know, but I also have great sympathy for them, because I know raising an autistic child is not an easy thing. I have not done it myself. But you have, and I've been around, and I know it's not an easy thing.
No. No. Listen, actually, we need to get a break here real quick. I just realized we're actually quite a bit of time in already. We're already about an hour in. So, listen, we're going to go ahead and take a break here real quick. When we come back, guys, we're going to continue this conversation because this actually is a really important one. I think that this one is one that many people really need to get attention paid to. The idea with CPS basically taking over the lives of our children. And we can't do anything about it because they're supposedly in control and the state owns our children. So when we come back, we'll get into that. Joe, hang on with us. We'll be right back.
Open Eyes looks for the truth in all things, no matter where it may lead. Whether it is the paranormal, government cover-ups, the dark agenda that the puppet masters are bringing to this world, or aliens and UFOs, no subject is taboo or off-limits. Listen to Open Eyes Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays on the LNM Network at latenightinthemidlands.com or openeyesnetwork.com starting at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Open hearts, open minds, open eyes. Ben Franklin said, "If you do the same thing tomorrow as you did today, you're going to get the same tomorrow as you got today." Changing the world starts with you, and changing you starts with changing the way you think. Late Night in the Midlands can help. Listen to all of our shows at latenightinthemidlands.com, because things really do need to change.
The LNM Radio Network and Late Night in the Midlands depends on you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. So help us continue to bring you the best guests with the best information and subscribe today. Information on becoming an LNM subscriber can be found at the top of latenightinthemidlands.com. Just click the About Subscriptions tab and become part of the family while helping the truth stay alive. And while you're at it, maybe subscriptions aren't for you. A one-time donation helps as well. Click that donate button on the right side of latenightinthemidlands.com and help us help you.
We'll be right back.
And hello and welcome back to Open Eyes. My name is Ira, and I want to thank you guys for sticking around through that break. Hopefully you guys went potty and you have your drinks and everything all ready, because, boy, we touched a nerve with Joe talking about the CPS stuff. I have some issues with it myself, just because I've had some experiences with it over the years, and the ridiculousness that goes with it, and the amount of power and the insanity that goes with that power really is something, people. If you have not ever had,
crazy.
Yes, if you have not ever had the experience of dealing with them, thank the lucky stars, because they are a royal pain, to say the least. And just let me touch on this here real fast as well. A lot of proof actually has been coming out to show that a lot of the child trafficking that goes on every year is actually due to the CPS system, that a lot of them are coming from that CPS system. We can get into that either tonight or at another point in time, but I wanted to toss that out there because that is an important aspect of all of this. It's done for a reason. Go ahead, Joe.
Okay, now duct tape's going to come off.
Chomping at the bit, I know. Go for it.
Weapons are about to come out now, because I hadn't heard that one yet. Okay, where's my armor? I need my armor. Boy, where's my armor?
Squire, where is my lance? But,
as Iris said, he's had experience with CPS over the years, and so have I. I have an ex-wife. How to describe her?
We don't have the appropriate words to be able to use on the air.
Yeah, very true.
Anyways, go for it.
Fruity as a nutcake or nutty as a fruitcake. One of the two. You take your pick. But during our custody fight, when we first got divorced, she actually called Child Protective Services on me. Not once, but twice in a 10-day period. The first time, I ended up getting a letter from the Department of Family and Social Services and went down to the office here in the county I live in, and not understanding what was – I figured it was something about, you know, Medicaid or something along those lines. And I walk into the office and I sit down with this very nice woman who was about 8.5 months pregnant, and another woman who had – didn't identify herself until I was sitting down, the door was closed, and this woman introduced herself as such and such from the Department of Social Services, and the other woman said, and I am Detective so-and-so from the X County Sheriff's Department. I'm like, huh? And I was informed that there had been a report that I was beating my son, at which point I was actually told that I did not have to answer any questions, but I did have time to consult with an attorney, and that if I did not want to answer any, if I did answer any questions, any answers I give would be entered into the record and could be used against me. In other words, I was Mirandized. At which point I told them everything honestly and openly, exactly what happened, how my son had obtained the bruises that were the cause of this. And it was the truth, the honest God truth. And this lady came out to the CPS lady, not the detective, came out to my house, talked to the people that live with me, who happen to be my parents. I know I'm a big loser, but my parents are older. They help me with my son. I help them with the house. There we go. My dad is the retired Fort Wayne police officer. Everything was fine. I went about my life. A few days later, I get another phone call from DCFS, and I said, well, isn't this already been taken care of? I was told that this – oh, no, this is a new allegation, at which point I was actually attending school at the time. I went in and told my professor that I needed to leave for a little while, and he graciously let me go. And I told the lady on the phone that I would be home in 2 hours, and I expected to see her then. And when the lady came out, she was another very nice lady. I'm not saying that all DCFS agents are uber bitches or uber jackasses. Pardon my French, but that's the only thing I can think of at this time. Most of them are very helpful, very concerned, very well-meaning do-gooders that have a tendency to stick their overly large noses into things. But on both of my cases ended up where the accusations that were made by my ex-wife were not proven.
Right. They were false allegations, and they knew that basically walking in. But because they have to investigate every call that comes in, So
and
that's
the same
that's
similar
the
situation happened with you.
Right.
Ira.
Exactly. Because it was a false allegation against me from someone basically trying to get revenge for something. And so we handled it and it was all taken care of. And the person that we dealt with was good. But
yeah. Well, it also didn't hurt the fact that your brother showed up dressed looking like an attorney.
Well, yeah, but again, okay, so getting into the more extended types of things, though, there really are a lot of issues when it comes to CPS. A lot of times they do walk into a situation, and yes, sometimes their hands are tied and they don't have a choice but to do so, but a lot of times it's a matter of their power has gotten to their head, and they feel that
I'm going to take your children, and there's not a damn thing
exactly,
you can do about it.
Exactly. And so then they become wards of the state and they make a lot of money because they are now wards of the state. Mm-hmm. So it's a major issue.
It comes down to an issue with me of, you know, they take that, oh, it's an emergency situation. We're going to remove the children now and you'll have a hearing in 10 days. Excuse me?
Right.
No, if you're going to take my children in an emergency situation, you need to be in front of a judge within 24 hours explaining why.
We need a hearing now. Exactly. And how many times?
You need to be in front of a judge within, you know, a police officer. You know, these people have more power than a freaking police officer.
Yes, yes. In
they
a lot of cases, they do.
Knock on your door at 1 o'clock in the morning and say, we are here because we have a call and your children, we've been told your children are in danger and you have to let us in.
Yeah, and you don't have a choice. Because if you do try to refuse them coming in, then that's when they get the warrant. They come in and they take the children anyways. And now they have extra evidence.
Then they call the police officers,
right,
the sheriff's department, your city police, and say, exigent circumstances. You know, that's when they start screaming, oh, there are exigent circumstances. You don't need a warrant. You can go right on in.
Right. And then it looks worse on you for refusing to do to let them in. And at that point, then you're screwed. That's what it comes down to. Because they're going to take the word of the CPS over any parent, no matter who it is.
Because CPS agents are social workers and they've been trained.
Exactly. Even though it's been found over and over again that the worst thing that you could possibly do is let your kids fall into the hands of the state of the Child Protective Services. Right, exactly. So
the foster care system, don't get us wrong, there are some in the foster care system, there are some foster parents that are the salt of the earth. They are saints. They should be elevated to sainthood. They should be praised and lauded, and milk and honey should flow over them, and they should be, you know, put on pedestals. But they are very few and far between.
Yeah, yeah.
Most people that are foster parents are doing it for one reason and one reason only,
money.
A paycheck.
Yeah, because they do get a lot of money doing it. And so a lot of them will take them in. They will do whatever it takes to just basic care, and that's it. You know, you've got your three meals a day if you're lucky, and if you're not lucky, you're going to get tossed in a closet and maybe get some bread and water, and that's it. And a lot of cases, that exact same thing happens. There are multiple cases out there where children will be removed from homes that were actually very good homes for whatever reason, you know, some kind of stupid extraneous reason, and put into a foster care, and the child is forever damaged or killed.
Exactly.
Literally killed once they get into that foster family. And then the caseworker gets looked at. But when the parents allege that there is wrongdoing going on, oh, no, that's not a possibility.
No, these people are vetted. They're trained. They're whatever, and you're full of it.
Yeah, a lot of them do end up, like I said earlier, with the education system. A lot of them do end up becoming, end up finding out that they are psychopaths or sociopaths, that they have severe mental issues, and that a lot of them get into it because of those severe mental issues.
And not only that, but most social service agencies are so overwhelmed right now, especially DCFS and family, you know, or CPS. We're just going to call it CPS because that's what I've always had it in my head as. I'm sorry if it's not that in your state, but you understand what we know, what we're talking about here. Most of your caseworkers in that type of situation are dealing with 25, 30, 40 cases at a time. They just don't have enough hours in the day to deal with everything. And the good ones get burned out quickly. The bad ones just revel in the fact that, hey, I can do whatever I want. Nobody's going to look at me because I've got so many cases, they can't possibly know what's going on. And it's the truth. You can't possibly know what is going on when you're dealing with that many people. And they say, well, we should hire more of these caseworkers and lighten their load. Wonderful idea on paper. Impossible in execution because there is just so much money to go around.
Right, exactly. There's
only just so much money to go around.
Yep. So a lot of times due to that neglect of the proper things to do, basically, the children are the ones that end up getting hurt.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's like this case in Alabama. This caseworker has a burr under her saddle because these people did not bow and scrape before her and do exactly what she wanted them to do. So she is now going to make their life a living hell to try to get their own children back.
And essentially making it so that they never will be able to, no matter what they do.
I have a feeling that they've done one of the best things they could do.
The family, you mean?
Yeah, the family's done one of the best things they can do.
Yeah, put it out on the internet.
They not only put it out on the internet, but if you're reading this story, it's not just on the internet. I guarantee you local news has picked this up, and eventually national news will pick this up, and that'll bring the attention of somebody that I cannot believe I'm going to say this, but it would probably help. And again, I can't believe I'm actually going to freaking say
you're going to do it. You're going to do it.
But the God,
the Antichrist Lawyers Union.
Thank you. I didn't have to say it. Would probably help. Ooh, I hate them.
Yeah. How much bile do you have in your mouth now?
I just threw up my mouth a little bit.
Yeah. At least you didn't invoke Sonia Sotomayor this time around. So. But no, seriously, in this kind of a case, I would advocate definitely that something like that needs to get involved just because they can outcry about it, basically, you know.
Not only that, I know they've got an attorney, but, you know, if they're raising six kids, two of them autistic, these people cannot have
seven kids.
A lot of money.
Seven kids.
Okay, they cannot have a crap ton of money.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that their lawyer is not exactly the greatest. He's probably a very good lawyer, but he's not, you know, a top-tier lawyer like a Cochran or, you know, somebody like that. Whereas the ACLU, could probably bring a lot more pressure to bear.
Right. And that's the hope with it. That's one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about it tonight.
That is exactly what that particular organization was intended to do when it was created.
Right. And it's gotten away from it since then. But yeah.
Right. I mean, it is the name of the group is the American Civil Liberties Union. That is what they originally were brought together to do, is to protect the people from big government coming in and squashing them like itty bitty tiny little bugs. And that's exactly what they need to do, is they need to get involved in this and say, look, these people are having their civil liberties not just walked on. They're not just trodden on. They're having them run over with a backhoe.
Yeah. Yeah, in a big way. So getting away from that one a little bit, I wanted to bring up another article that I ran across that is along these same lines, just to get your thoughts on this. So,
by the way, people, this episode is 100% for the children.
For the children, yes.
And when you start hearing that particular phrase, it's for the children, watch out, because the propaganda is about to flow.
So a couple of days ago, I ran across an article that talks about a mother receiving a note from the daycare center that her 9-month-old child goes to. At this daycare center, they, gather the babies together in groups and that sort of thing. And let me just read the article here for you, and you'll get the idea. There's a reason people joke about babies being evil. Those little bundles of joy are capable of quite foul things, like poking you in the retina with their tiny talons of doom, or unleashing a geyser of pee right onto your unsuspecting face. As a side note, why hasn't anyone developed goalie-style protective masks for new parents yet? Seems like it'd be a great market. Anyways,
said it for years, a naked baby is an armed baby.
Yes, indeed. But they're not nefarious creatures, they're just babies. Which is why a note that came from a daycare provider is rubbing lots of moms the wrong way. The note was posted to a Facebook Working Moms group, and its contents include a mention that a 9-month-old girl was playing roughly and aggressively with the other babies. The note also said that the infant, named Samantha, was told that it's not okay to hurt her friends. Yet, surprise, surprise, the girl was smiling and going right back to hurting her friends. The note also suggested that the girl's parents help us by maybe discouraging her from playing roughly. Go for it.
Okay, first of all, she's freaking 9 months. She's a month younger than my daughter. And my daughter, I have my daughter this weekend. My daughter, I'm holding her in my arms, and she's, cooing and playing with her little doll that she's there. And then her 8-year-old brother sits down next to me, and he's got his little iPod in his hand, and she immediately flops over towards him and grabbing for his iPod and scratched him. Okay.
She's acting aggressively. Put her on Ritalin.
Okay, first of all, she's 10 months old, in this case, 9 months old. She doesn't know the difference between right. She wouldn't know the difference between right and wrong if it came up and tickled her cute little nose. And to sit there and say, no, 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 don't play aggressively, does about as much good as trying to teach a German shepherd Mozart.
Yeah, that my thought on it was, okay, so what are they going to do? Are they going to go put this 9-month-old child through psychological evaluations, put her on Ritalin or lithium or Xanax or whatever, Valium, or are they now trying to develop the new, the new types of onesies that let the children have the nice little hugs for themselves? the little baby straight jackets. Yeah, straight onesies. So that was my first thought with it.
My first thought is, grow up. You're the daycare provider. Grow up. Move the child away from the others if she's acting too aggressively for you. Or let the kids be kids, for crying out loud. When you and I were kids, okay, I'm going to quote George Carlin. We need to leave them alone. Just leave them alone. And this is coming from Mr. Conductor. I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I mean, kids nowadays have batting helmets, biking helmets, knee pads, arm pads. I'm not going to go as far as George, but anybody that has actually heard his rant on this subject knows where this thing culminates. Let kids be kids. They learn kids, especially infants, learn from doing. They don't learn from you sitting there talking to them. They don't learn. They do, but they don't. They learn language skills from you talking to them and reading to them and interacting with them, but they learn interaction. They learn physical skills.
They learn cause and effect is what this all comes down to. Starting at about 6 months old, sometimes about 8 months old, but definitely during this time period where like your daughter is or where this child is, they're learning cause and effect. If I do this, this is going to happen. So exactly. They're learning the action and reaction.
If I pinch baby A, baby A kicks me.
Or so baby A starts crying.
Don't pinch baby A.
Right. Right, exactly. And that's what
it's
comes to my mind with it.
Developmental process.
But see, that's again getting into the whole, oh, we have to be so hyper protective of everything that our children do now. It's insane. I mean, you and I, when we were growing up, we'd go outside, we'd start running around, and we wouldn't come back home until the lights came on the light poles, you know?
Exactly.
And
you know, we had our, you know,
and it was
we
fine.
Had a boundary line as far as, you know, when you're six, seven, 8 years old, you had a boundary line. You can go to the corner and no further, or you could go to this corner and no further.
Yeah. When I was,
you can go to Billy's house, you can go to Joey's house, but no further.
When I was eight
and
years
the thing
old,
is,
I,
we would push that boundary and we'd be gone all day long.
Yeah. But me, when I was 8 years old or 7 years old, I think I was 7 years old. I tried to run away. I decided to run away. I got myself a little bag together and all my money that I took out of my little piggy bank, and I put it into my pocket, and I started down the driveway to go run away. I was on my bike, got to the end of the road, and I didn't go any further because I wasn't allowed to go beyond that part.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, parents nowadays, you know, everybody's always complaining because kids are lazy. Kids are, you know, they're always on the video games. They're always on this. They're always on that. Well, the thing is that my generation, and I'm sorry to say this, starting with my brother and I's generation as parents and continuing on to the young generations that are below us, it's not about using the television as a babysitter. It's a matter of this belief that they can't let their children out of their sight. And the fact that, oh, we have to have them where we can see them at all times. So they'd stick them in front of the television and keep an eye on them, which has led to obesity, which has led to, like, you know, a lowered attention span, which has led to schools demanding that these kids be pumped full of psychoactive chemicals that have never been approved for anybody under the age of 18.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, actually, when did all of that really start to come about? Because I've tried in the past to try to figure out, like, why did that happen? You know, why did we go from like one generation where we had like freedom to a generation to maybe two generations later having nothing? And it seems like it was the whole stranger danger stuff that really yes. started it off to
it
me.
Is. Because we did not have that program when we were in elementary and junior high. And I quote actually a TV show, which is Criminal Minds. Dr. Spencer Reed on that show said the worst thing that we ever did to our own children was the Stranger Danger program.
I agree. Yes, I absolutely agree.
Because what they did was they made people terrified of a 1% chance of a stranger abducting a child or molesting a child when the major danger in that is somebody this child already knows.
Right, exactly. Almost every abduction case happens from a person that's in the child's life already.
Exactly.
And normally it's a relative of some kind.
A relative or a very dear, close family friend. That is who's doing the majority of the molesting and kidnapping.
Yeah.
It's you know, if you look at the Crime Information Center, the National Crime Information Center, the statistics on stranger-based abductions are staggeringly low.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It's 3-5% max. You know, it's usually, especially in the molestation cases, it's a teacher, it's a parent, it's a brother, a sister.
Right. It's somebody that's in that child's life that they trust.
And they intimately know.
Yeah. And the child trusts them. So therefore they can get away with it because of that trust factor. Exactly. It's almost never a stranger. And that I think is where the big starting point ended up occurring to me.
Yeah. Because then the parents started, you know, and it wasn't so much the kids that it terrified.
No, it was the parents. Right, exactly. And that's when it started that mentality.
Sticking them in front of the idiot box. Now, some of us, like my brother and I, we pretty much were in front of the idiot box anyway because, hell, we wanted to be.
Well, I was in front of my computer more than anything else. I never really watched TV, but I was always in front of my computer. But now, look, this actually gets into another topic that I know that you wanted to at least mention tonight, but we're starting to run a little bit low on time, so I'll just have you go through this kind of quickly. But you were talking about how the obesity issue and all of that stuff comes about this. So there's go ahead and touch on that.
Another story that I read, again, on Yahoo. I happen to get one, I get my stories every morning from Yahoo, like most of us do. You know, they get the little email. And as I was reading through the one about the young man in Plainview, Texas, there was another link to a story about a young girl in Palm Beach County, Florida, who came home. She's 6 years old. She came home from school with a letter for her mother. And it was a form letter that was was not in a sealed envelope, so anybody could, you know, take the letter from the child and read it, or the child herself, which she did, that said her body mass index for a 6-year-old child who stood 4 feet 5 inches tall and weighed 60 pounds, that her body mass index indicated that she was too heavy. She was bordering on obese. And the little girl who had read the note looked at her mother and asked, "Do they think I'm fat, mommy?"
Yeah. Yeah. And this gets into.
And this mother, of course, is just livid.
Yeah, I would be too. This gets into the idea that I've had kind of an issue with over the years with the whole body shaming stuff, that children are being taught to be ashamed of their bodies all the time. And this goes right into it. This whole BMI and is your kid obese, blah, 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 bull crap that goes on. It's a way for people's self-esteem to be downed so that they can be easily controlled. That's exactly what it comes down to. When someone has an issue with their self-confidence and with their self-image, they're more easily subjected to systems of control.
Exactly. Now, you know, I'm 6'5". I'm 275 pounds. Am I a perfect male Adonis? Yeah, absolutely not. Do I care what other people think of my body? Not particularly, no. If somebody finds my body pleasing to their eye, wonderful. Maybe we can hook it up, have a little fun. If they don't, well, there's the door. Don't let it hit you where the good Lord split you.
Yeah, and the thing with the BMIs that drive me nuts too is that this never takes into account the fact that muscle mass is much heavier than fat mass.
Muscle mass is twice as dense as fat.
Right. And so this gets into the idea of a story that I ran across just a couple of years ago where a very athletic younger child, I think she was like 12 or so, was told that she was actually obese because her BMI was out of range. But the problem is that she was not fat. She didn't have a lick of fat on her. She was very muscular. But they told her that she was obese because of this thing. So that one little piece of tool that they use, that the tools
use. Which they
have
been using the body mass index since my brother and I were in elementary school. And they would pinch your back and take this caliper and put it
on. Yeah, the whole thing was, can you pinch an inch?
The thing is, they don't take into effect bone density or frame density. Everybody has a slightly different bone structure. Like with me, I'm 6'5", I'm 270 pounds, I have a heavy, I've got what they consider a large bone structure. So that's going to toss off of my, you know, quote unquote body mass index.
I'm not fat, I'm big boned.
Which I am. My brother has got a medium to small bone structure. You're much svelter than I am. Much more compact, even though you're 6'1". You're much more compact than I am.
I'm wiry.
Hey, that you are, lad. Yeah, you started it, laddie boy. You started it. But, you know, the whole idea of judging somebody's body mass is ridiculous.
It is.
Now, if somebody is morbidly obese, yes, that's going to cause health problems galore. And it is true. It'll cause heart disease. It can contribute to diabetes, whatever. But we're talking about kids who are between 6 and 16. Their bodies change so much in that time period that trying to determine childhood obesity is pointless.
It really is. I mean, again, there are ones that are obviously on the obese side of things, but a lot of times it's an environmental factor more than anything. If they were outside playing, there really would be no issue. It again comes down to the idea that because of the way that the systems are now set up, we have so much problems. We're getting fed these GMO foods. We're getting fed with chemicals, you know, better living through chemistry, essentially. And between it all, we have become soft consumers, and that's it. We've become cows.
Stagnant. We've become.
Yeah.
Now, there are groups out there that are trying to reverse that trend. I know you're not a big fan of football, but the NFL does have a great program, and it's called the Play 60 program. They want kids to get their butts off the couch and go outside and play for at least 60 minutes a day. Go out and run, go out and jump, go out and, you know, just get active.
Right. Let kids be kids. That's what it comes down to. Let kids be kids.
It's slowly starting to reverse that trend of keeping them isolated, keeping them inside, you know, letting them watch as much TV or play as many games as you want. You know, my son is 8 years old, and he does like to play video games. But we didn't buy him a PlayStation. We didn't buy him an Xbox. We've got him a Wii and a Wii U. Because he has to play the games that he wants to play, he has to move. He has to be active.
Yeah, so if he's going to play something, at least he'll be moving while he does it.
I've gotten him an Xbox. I gave him my old Xbox 360 so he can play Minecraft, which gets his mind active.
Yeah, well, that's one thing that I was going to say as well, is that a lot of the stuff that you see going on is that the programs, the quote-unquote programs that you see happening right now are geared towards keeping children in place to get fatter, to get lazier, while at the same time doing everything that they can to stop their imaginations.
Exactly.
And between the two, again, you have this system where it is easy to control people.
Right. Which is why I wept when I heard, you know, I've never played Minecraft. I don't quite get the idea of the game.
I love Minecraft.
I know you do. You've been trying to get me to play it for years, and it's not going to happen because my brother and I are both gamers, as you well know. My gaming style is, oh, look, there's something over there that needs killing. I'm going to walk over and I'm going to kill it. That's me. My brother, on the other hand, is, oh, look, let's build a world here and then put things in to kill.
Anyway,
that's what my son does. He gets on and plays Minecraft for hours and just builds all kinds of incredible and does all kinds of incredible things. And he's 8 years old. I have no idea what he's doing. It boggles my mind. Now, for his birthday this year, I'm going to buy a Kinect that can connect up to my old Generation 1 360 so that I can buy him more games that allow him to move and groove and dance. And, you know, I know you're not a big fan of the Kinect, and you know what I have to say to you? That's all I have to say about that. Because it gets him active. It engages his brain and his body at the same time. which is going to make him a lot less easy to control. You know, he plays baseball. I get him outside during the summer and get him away from the television as much as I can. Now, his mother, on the other hand, lets him watch The Walking Dead.
Yeah, which is an issue that we can get into at another point in time. Unfortunately, we are actually out of time here. Is there anything that you have as a final thought or push that you want to do?
Yes. I'm going to say, in the great words of two men, first, George Carlin, leave your kids alone. Let them daydream. Everybody in the world needs an hour or two of just daydreaming. And quit with the mindless structure. Let them go outside. Let them play. Let them make friends. Let them, if they want to watch TV, fine, but limit the amount. But get them outside. Get them outside. Let them meet friends. If you don't see them for a couple of hours, that's what cell phones are for nowadays. And my final thought of the evening, I said it at the top of the show, and I'm going to say it again. To everybody out there, peace and long life. Live long and prosper.
Absolutely appropriate. Guys, thank you so much for listening to this episode. I really had a great time, as I always do whenever I have Joe on here. He's always so fun to bounce things off of. If you guys want to give us any feedback, you're more than welcome to send it. We welcome any and all that you want to send to us. You can send it to feedback@openeyesnetwork.com. If you want to go to the show notes for this show, which I'll have links to the news stories that he and I talked about, as well as the ones that I did at the top of the show, you can go to openeyesnetwork.com/OE078. On Wednesday, we are going to have Maggie Hart back on, and she is going to be a lot of fun to talk to. You guys seem to enjoy her the last time. We're going to have a wonderful conversation about some very awkward topics, I think. Anyways, so that'll be on Wednesday, and that'll start at 7 o'clock. Be sure to stick around. Michael Vera is going to bring you Late Night in the Midlands here in just a few minutes. And if you want to give us our more feedback, you can go to our Facebook or Twitter platforms. We're at Open Eyes Network or Ira Robinson at both of those. And also, just so that you guys know, Joe and I are developing a show to do together on a weekly basis. We're going to be doing it on Thursday nights. We're hoping to start it sometime within the middle of March. We'll let you know as that time comes forward what's going to happen with that. So again, make sure to tune in on Wednesday, latenightinthemidlands.com, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Thank you guys for listening. Keep safe out there and have fun.